The flags of nations are going up all over Johannesburg, hanging in shopping malls, flying from cars, and proffered hopefully by street vendors. Expectation is in the air, but this is a city not so much holding its breath as galloping at full pelt towards Africa's first football World Cup. Social diaries are filling fast. There was a crowd so eager at the recent opening night of Biko, where the soul resides, a play about struggle hero Steve Biko, that people spilled into the aisles of the Market Theatre and made the best of it. The following evening there was a full house again at the Cinema Nouveau for a screening of Alan Bennett's new play, The Habit of Art, pretending to be live from the National Theatre in London. Sandwiched in between, I was at Boekhuis, an independent bookshop, for the launch of a collection of writing by South African gay men. The ever-eloquent judge, Edwin Cameron, spoke of his dismay at the complacency of the middle class, accusing the annual Joburg Gay Pride Day of losing its political edge. He wanted more anger and more weeping. The parting shot from a voice at the back was perhaps the most memorable. A gay black student said people tell him he's lucky to live in South Africa, but I don't feel lucky. He does not dare to come out to his parents and feels gays are invisible in black communities. He told me afterwards, there is no word for gay in African languages, except insulting ones. Another gay man, who had come out only weeks ago, told him, you've got to try and avoid the stage where your parents sit you down and ask. Then you'll have to decide whether you tell the truth or pretend you're something else. That moment will define the rest of your life. The following morning, it was the turn of Arts on Main, an industrial warehouse turned art gallery, to present In Context, a series of exhibitions and interventions, whatever that means, by artists from South Africa and beyond. And that evening, all cultural attention turned to the Mandela Auditorium at the Joburg Theatre for the boys in the photograph. This is a reworking of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Ben Elton's unusual musical, The Beautiful Game, which opened in London in 2000 and ran for a year. It has been exhumed to coincide with the World Cup, with performances scheduled to avoid any fixture clashes with the actual matches. Africa may never have seen anything quite like this. There are dancing footballers, marching orangemen, and IRA kneecappings, recreated by a South African cast speaking and singing in broad Belfast accents, with varying success. Audiences come to downtown Johannesburg to see the troubles of the late 60s and early 70s played out, with Irish flutes, whistles and fiddles, scored by the man who gave the world Cats, The Phantom of the Opera, and How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria? Then there's a 2010 coda with World Cup team shirts, a Macarapa hat, and an instrument Lloyd Webber had never deployed, the Vuvuzela. It's a hugely ambitious spectacular with multi-layered sets and a budget of nearly £1 million. It's an official World Cup event, so the organisers might have been less than delighted when Elton, who wrote the book and lyrics, told guests, everybody said it was Andrew Lloyd Webber's football musical, but I think you'll agree, it's not really about football, is it? Football's a metaphor for life and hope and youth and spiritual regeneration, and this musical is above all and singly and only about the corrupting power of hatred and the redeeming power of love. Indeed, I felt there was more focus on Ulster sectarianism than on sport, which is something of a plot device rather than the heart of the piece. So, will South Africans hear echoes of their own tormented history in the land of Gerry Adams and Ian Paisley? For a while I wasn't so sure, but it became more evident in lyrics such as, if hatred's all we're fighting for, then I don't want to win. One man who certainly felt the parallels was Danny Jordan, the head of the World Cup organising committee. He told an exuberant gathering in the theatre foyer afterwards, as a South African, it was a journey through our own history, and I found that an incredible journey. It was almost a spiritual cleansing for me to look at the road that we travelled. Now we've arrived at this moment, we must not let this moment slip. All of us as South Africans must embrace it. Then Elton took the stage and the microphone, wine glass in hand, with the cocky assurance of his stand-up comedy days. He said, we have reconciliation in Northern Ireland and the astonishing spectacle of Sinn Féin and the Ulster Unionists sharing power in Stormont. This is simply beyond any expectation that anyone in Ireland or the UK expected to see in their lifetime or the lifetimes of their children. I believe it is no exaggeration to say that the extraordinary example of South Africa played a genuine role in that reconciliation. There were cheers and applause. Elton continued. It was simply the shining light of the 20th century that it was possible for the genius of truth and reconciliation here in South Africa gave an example to the world. Those with so many reasons to continue to fight and hate were able to sit down and speak and build a new nation. For all that the United Kingdom has bedeviled Africa in its time, my goodness, Africa came back and taught us a lesson that we needed to learn. The fact that Andrew and I were able to bring our show here today is resonant on so many levels. There was a sense of excitement and pride, a growing belief that, for all the reservations, this World Cup really could help Africa stand tall. Johannesburg, in the crisp May sunshine, feels like a place whose time has come. I only hope it knows where to go when the curtain falls and the fickle carnival moves on.